from you.
Okay, Andrea Merrill representing Austin Subject.
Mitch Hacking, I represent agriculture.
Brett Providell, I'm an at-large member.
Boyd Blackwell, Division of Wildlife.
Jerry Jorgensen, elected officials.
Melissa Wardle, non-consumptives.
Daniel Davis, sportsman.
Joe Banning, agriculture.
Thank you. First off, we need to approve the agenda for tonight. Has everybody had a chance to review it? Do we have a motion to approve that?
I make a motion to approve the agenda.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Jerry seconded. Andrew made the motion. All in favor? It's unanimous. And we also need to talk about our minutes. Actually, there is one correction to the minutes that I need to bring up, that I saw for our last meeting. There was a spot where we had the wrong name in it, and it's on page 16. It said Joe Batty, and it's actually Clayton Batty. It was there.
Clay. You know, just Clay.
Yeah. Clay. Mm-hmm. But that's the only changes that I would recommend. Yeah, there. We have a motion to approve those.
I make a motion to approve the minutes. I have amended.
Okay, any second?
Second.
Melissa seconded. All in favor? Unanimous. Thank you. Well, with that in mind, let me give an update of the Wildlife Board meeting. As you recall, we had a pretty lengthy meeting ourselves in the RAC last month. As far as the waterfowl recommendation and rule amendments, the board passed it unanimously, just as the division had presented. On the statewide elk management plan, there was a motion made not to lower the Monroe age class, and it failed. It was 3 in favor, 3 opposed, and so the chairman had to do the tiebreaker, and he opposed it, so that one failed. And then the Wildlife Board passed that as the division had recommended it. On the Bucks, Bulls, and the once-in-a-lifetime, the 2016 season dates, application timeline, and rule amendments, that was kind of a lengthy discussion also. Dan, welcome.
Sorry I'm a little bit late.
No problem.
Christmas parties.
Appreciate you being here.
Thank you.
Glad you could come.
On the muzzleloader on the scopes, there was a lot of discussion on that, as you can imagine, as there was here. 3 of the racks were actually voted it down, 3 of the 5 racks. We were one of the 2 racks that didn't oppose it. As far as increasing the scope abilities. After a lot of discussion, there was a lot of discussion on the Wasatch and Manti units and the mid-season hunts. It was decided to wait another year to see how the ones that had been presented would work out. Then the Wildlife Board passed that, just as the division presented also. So we got the muzzleloaders and the other issues that they had were just as it was presented. On the Southeast Region Deer Management Plan, it was the Wildlife Board passed that one as presented. The CWMUs, it was brought up that some CWMUs were being allocated differently than other denoters. There wasn't really a real clear standard amongst that was consistent amongst the CWM units, and so there was a motion to add an action item to have a committee formed and come up with a standard for the CWMUs, and that passed unanimously. Let's see. And that was then the the Wildlife Board passed the CWMU management plan as the division presented, and it was passed unanimously. On the Landowner Association permit numbers for 2016, motion was made for the Book Cliffs to keep their nine, the Book Cliffs Association, Landowner Association, to keep their nine tags that they're getting, and it actually passed 4-1. And there again, it was brought up that there isn't a lot of consistency as far as the standards goes for those. And then there was a motion to pass the balance of the recommendation as it was presented, and it passed unanimously. And then there was another motion to add to the action item a list to review the Landowner Association permit process, and then that passed unanimously. There was one other item that we didn't deal with in this group, but it had to deal with the Mexican wolf. There was a letter that had been created by the Wildlife Board to basically support the governor in recovery of the Mexican wolf. Basically, they were opposed to allowing it to come to the state of Utah. And it was the Wildlife Board that passed that unanimously to support the governor in objecting to having those introduced into the state of Utah. And that was it. It was kind of a marathon there too. It was a pretty lengthy meeting on that one. With that in mind, I'll turn the time over to Boyd for a regional update.
Okay. Going on in the region. Before I get into some of the stuff that we're doing as an agency, I've had a couple of questions from folks on how they would access our meeting minutes. You'll look into your drop boxes. All of you have a drop box. And so if you go into the drop box and you open the board packet for the coming meeting, you'll see the minutes in there. I'm kind of looking at the screen and talking at the same time, I'm sorry. So there's that, and then you can also find them online under the same kind of thing. Board, Wildlife Board packets, and you'll see the minutes under that as well. Now for the region, in our aquatic section, most of our aquatics guys right now are working on data and reports and getting those ready and looking for what they're going to do next year. They probably already got plans for next year, but there may be some stuff they want to add or change or move on to some other projects. One cool thing that we've done in the region is we've been actually Trout Unlimited took the bull by the horns and did this as one of their projects, and they've installed three windmills up on Calder. Yeah, and we've had some problems with Calder freezing, and we've gotten a lot of winter kill on there from time to time, and it's been a concern that we've had, but we couldn't come up with the funding to get it done, and TU did. And we're very appreciative of that. We're excited to see how it works. There is a private reservoir up there in the same general area, and he's got windmills, and it seems to work pretty good, so we thought that was a good thing. So we're excited about that. If you go up there, we're not sure what it's going to do to the ice. Right off, we think it'll probably, it's made to keep the ice thinner, and so we did put up some signs, and hopefully folks will pay attention to them and just be careful when they go out on the ice, and as we go along with this through the years, we'll get a better idea. We'll get a better idea of what it does, but it's pretty cool. It's going to work really good and keep some of those big fish alive that some people are really psyched up about. So, in the wildlife section, right now you may have seen helicopters flying around low. We're doing some capture work for deer, and that's going very well from what I understand. Right, Dax?
Yes, we're done.
They're done already? So we just barely started. Three days ago, and they're done already. So it was a good capture, and we're really excited about the data that we're able to get from this project. And I think we'll be one of these days. I'll have the wildlife section come in and give you a report on that. Next time I see that we don't have a huge schedule. We'll be able to come in and give you a report on that. The law enforcement section has started their saturation patrols. So you might see a lot of wildlife law enforcement guys. That's guys with the stars on the doors. They'll be out in certain areas. And
can you tell us what area?
Bunch. Yeah.
Wherever you lead.
Right by outside your back door. So, we started those saturation patrols. So you might see 5 to 10 people in one general area. You might see none because they're all over in another area. So, but we started those patrols, and it's to protect our deer herds in this winter time when the deer are all together and the bucks are most vulnerable. So, with that, Mr. Chairman, that's the updates that I have for you for now, unless there's any questions.
Do you have any more on those deer that were killed, I think, in the central region?
No. I read some more about that on Twitter today, and they're still, as far as I know, they're still looking for the guys that were shooting those shot.
Wait, when I was in central region, if they're not meeting, they have...
So the answer is still is no.
Okay.
Yes?
Are there any rifle hunts still going?
We have cow hunts. Antlerless elk, and we have extended archery still going. Any others?
Coyotes.
Yeah. So there's no big game. Well, there is just antlerless elk.
Other question down here. Boy, on the minutes, the previous months, it would be really nice if Stacy would just include that as another attachment, like members with a packet. Could that be arranged that way? You know, it's like one stop shop for the RAC members. They get their packet. They get the previous meeting, previous month meetings.
I'll ask her about that.
Good. Thank you.
I'll ask her about that.
Okay. Thank you. Appreciate that. Well, first thing on our agenda is the R657-3 rule amendments on live lobster.
Lobster in Utah.
That's
a great use for the song.
Yes, this is an interesting one. So just a couple of slides. We just need to make a change to our collection, importation, transportation, and possession rule in the aquatic section. So why are we recommending a change to this rule? The current rule requires the COR to possess live aquatic animals for commercial use. So, but this includes like when you walk into Red Lobster and there's the lobsters in the tank there. Also, fish and crustaceans for consumption at grocery stores and specialty markets. And neither the Department of Agriculture nor the Utah Division of Wildlife desire to govern and control these types of activities. Most of these are marine species. Marine species won't live in freshwater habitats, so the risk of these critters is pretty low. So that ties in directly. So in order to exempt them, though, we need to kind of tweak the definition of marine aquatic animals. So we just need to separate these from species that we're concerned about. So we're changing the definition to say that COR is not required, provided that this animal spends its entire life cycle in a marine environment, that it's not classified as invasive or a nuisance by state or federal law, that it will be used for immediate human consumption, and you know, immediate is 30 days, that it's obtained legally, and that it is never released alive. And so that's it.
Okay, thank you, Jenna. Any questions by the rock? Butch?
We might have chance to get wildlife permit or habitat permit. You go in and grab one of these critters?
Apparently you would. Now, if you grab one, we'd have to assume that your intention would be to release it alive. That would be a violation.
So we do need the wildlife habitat permit.
So at this point in time, I'm not sure what to answer. Really not sure what to respond.
Was that a yes or no?
Increased license sales.
I guess that's a no.
If you were going to possess it outside of the restaurant, it may be a problem.
It's for commercial use. So
we used to buy it at Walmart, go home and cook it. Used to, I don't know about it.
But yeah, this is for. I mean, these are sold in grocery stores, and so I would assume yes, you could purchase them and leave that store with them alive. I've not done it, so I'm not familiar with the process. But yes, these critters would be alive, right? You're just not allowed to release them alive. So even that activity would be exempt because it's under the assumption that it's going to be for immediate human consumption, and that is not going to be released alive.
Yes or no?
They make the great white elephant.
Any other questions by the rack?
Yeah, I think
Great.
Are there actual lobsters in Utah?
No. Marine species would not survive in freshwater environments. That's part of why we're doing this, because these species are true marine species and require saltwater environments, so they're therefore low risk.
I didn't know if it was edges of the Great Salt Lake that they can survive in or whatever.
No, the only thing that lives in that really super salty environment is the brine shrimp. And we don't have any. As things become diluted, you just have the freshwater component, and then
is the crawdad a subspecies of the lobster related to the
lobster? I don't know off the top of my head the genus and species of any lobster species. So Oronectes is the crayfish we have around here, Oronectes virilis, and I'm guessing it's probably just in the same family, but does anyone know off the top of their head? I know.
They're like a fifth cousin, I think.
Twice removed. Yes.
Any other questions by the rec? Questions by the public? Okay, we've got there's some comments cards. If you have any comments that you want to come up in the comment period, please fill out one of these cards, bring it up, give it to myself or Boyd, and we'll let you give a comment. Thank you. comments by the public. Any comments on, haven't seen one on this particular topic. Still haven't seen one on this particular topic. So, comments by the rack. Well, then I'll entertain a motion.
Yeah, I'll make a motion that we go ahead and accept the proposed changes that the division is making.
Okay. Dan made that motion. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Who was that?
Daniel Davis took the second. All those in favor? Unanimous. Did you vote?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, would you, Lloyd's got a, an answer there for us.
Crawfish, also known as crawfish, crawdads, freshwater lobsters, or mud bugs, are freshwater crustaceans resembling small lobsters to which they are related. Taxonomically, they are members of the superfamily.
Oh,
so they're distant.
They're a fifth cousin.
Yeah.
Dad yeah. was right.
Yeah.
All right, the next thing up is our 2016 Black Bear Recommendations and Rule Amendments. And this is Leslie.
Can you guys hear me okay? I'm far away. So just a little bit of history going back. We do have a Utah Black Bear Management Plan that was approved in 2011. It's a 12-year plan. Being that it's a 12-year plan, it requires, it was set up a little differently, that the division would make recommendations on bears every 4 years for a 3-year cycle. I came around last year, you notice I'm here again this year, so we're going off plan because we made some pretty drastic changes to our season structure and weapon changes last year. And so we were concerned that we may over-harvest bears a little bit or do something. And so until we're comfortable with the changes in season structures and things like that that we made, we're going to be recommending we're doing bear recommendations on an annual basis until we're comfortable with that. The plan was put together or recommended by the Black Bear Advisory Group, which consisted of representatives from all of the following groups that are listed. So the plan goal is to maintain a healthy, balanced bear population. And a healthy bear population is one that allows the population to reproduce and maintain genetic variability. The plan does state that we, with bears specifically, we need to pay attention to livestock depredation, nuisance and human-bear conflict, habitat limitations, other wildlife species population objectives, and of course provide recreational opportunity for houndsmen and other sportsmen. So the management system for black bear is broken down into three different regimes. Each of our units in the state is managed under one of these regimes. And it's based on 3-year average from all of our harvest data. So a light regime, a light strategy is one where you don't have a whole lot of bears. You're trying to increase the bear population in that unit. You don't have a whole lot of adult males in the population. You don't want to be harvesting a lot of females, and you have to have a low level of human bear conflict. We have about 25% of our units are managed under this strategy. The moderate strategy is where the strategy that most of our units fall under. This one, we want our adult males in our harvest to be greater than 5 years old, and we want that harvest to be about 25 to 35% of those being older than 5. Female harvest, we do want female harvest on our bears to maintain populations and not allow them to grow out of control. So it's a stabilizing effect, and so we want female harvest to be between 30 and 40%. To be under the moderate strategy, you have to have moderate levels of human-bear conflict. We don't want to see a lot of livestock depredation or a lot of human and nuisance problems. A liberal strategy is used on our units where depredation and nuisance take exceeds sport take, and where we have a lot of human-bear conflict. In this, you want to see a lot fewer adult males in the population, and we want to see a higher female harvest between 40 to 45% because we are trying to reduce the bear population in these areas. So the current status really hasn't changed from last year looking at all of our data. Bear are a really long-lived species. We've got an excellent data set. All of the bears that are harvested in the state are required to be brought in. We look at the carcass, we take a tooth, and we age each one of those bears. So we use our age and sex data in absence of survey data, you know, they're not like deer or elk where you can go fly or count. So based on that information, we can go back and we can reconstruct the population, so the ages that we see in our harvest. And you can kind of build a population that says this is what you'd have to have in order to see the age and sex structure that we do in our harvest. And we estimate that we have about a minimum of 4,100 bears in our state right now. This is up from a population density estimate that was done in 2009. We estimate, based on our bear denning data provided from our regions, each of our regions have female bears that are radio collar, and they go into those dens every year. They look at the cubs in the den, and we base reproduction and all of that, and then we look at the condition of the sow, and that gives us whether or not that population is increasing. Based on the information that provided from our regions, we estimate that we're seeing about a 5 to 6% increase annually in our bear populations. So our expected harvest, our average statewide success rate usually ranges between 42% and 45%. Last year in 2014, it was up to 50%, and this past season, with all of the changes that we implemented, it was only about 47%. The one thing that we were trying to do, our 2014 sport harvest, we harvested 283 bears. So with all of the changes that we recommended last year, we were trying to increase sport harvest by at least 20%. So the difference between the 283 and the 378, the Division of Wildlife and Wildlife Services last year took 95 bears that were nuisance or livestock depredation bears. So we were trying to kind of reverse that trend and reduce the number of bears that we have to take for livestock depredation or nuisance, and kind of use sportsmen to help lower and decrease bear densities in some of the areas where we have a lot of problems. So this past year, with all of the changes, our sport harvest actually went up to 325. That's a 20% increase over the previous year, and that's exactly what we were trying to do. So I'm really excited that it worked. Our depredation and nuisance take went from 95 back down to 45, which is in line with our usual nuisance and depredation harvest. Now, I can't say that sportsman harvest was the reason for the decrease in depredation and nuisance. There are a lot of factors like weather conditions, drought conditions, and all of that that also influence whether or not a bear becomes a nuisance bear. But this is in line with what we were trying to do, was increase harvest overall. So just to show you again, and this goes along with that, you can see that the line with the triangles are the number of bear permits that have been issued. You can see from 2014 to 2015, which was last year's recommendations, we increased permits quite drastically. Even though we increased permits, harvest overall wasn't significantly higher than the previous year. But if you look at the bars on the bottom, the light gray bar on the far right is our 2015 harvest, and you can see that the sport harvest was much higher than the previous years, and our depredation and nuisance, which is the dark part of that top bar, was down. You can see that from 2013 to 2015, we've significantly increased harvest, and that's what we were trying to accomplish. Just another graph to show you depredation and nuisance. Last year, we exceeded our 10-year high for depredation and nuisance problems with the removal of 95 bears. So just showing this here, this past year, we only removed 45 bears that were in trouble. And so that puts us kind of in line if you look at the trend there with where we've been in the past. And I would like to see that continue to go down. So I'll just get into our season structures. One of the things that we changed this last year, previously we only had a spring season. And during the spring season, you could either use hounds, or you could bait, or you could spot and stalk, whichever you chose. The division was trying to do a couple things by implementing a new season. We were trying to increase harvest by splitting two seasons out and reduce conflicts that we had traditionally during that spring season. We issue quite a few permits during that time, and to have hounds and bait hunters, this region in particular dealt with quite a few conflict calls with people saying that hounds were running off of bait and that type of thing. So we created a spring limited entry season, and during this season, no bait is allowed, and it's hounds or spotter stock only. We're recommending that it go from April 2nd to June 3rd. Our previous spring season ended by May 25th, so we've added a week onto the spring. So the percent permits filled, that's not harvest success. It's because we haven't done an actual survey of the hunters to find out who did or didn't hunt. So of the permits that we issued for this season, 49% of them were filled. So it's a little different than harvest success. So the second season that we, the season that we ended up adding, we called the summer limited entry. During this season, we didn't allow the use of hounds, primarily to protect fawning and calving. That's when that primarily occurs. During this hunt, you could bait or spot and stalk. You could, and the percent permits, the other change that we made is that we allowed people to use any weapon, any legal weapon over bait. So previously, if you had a bait station, you could only use archery tackle. You can now use a rifle or any legal firearm. The one thing that was different last year, when we went through the rack and the board process, when it got to the board added a 2-week pre-baiting onto the front of this season to allow people to begin baiting 2 weeks early so that they could get bears accustomed to their bait stations. We're recommending only a 1-week extension on that, and that's primarily because we're still getting some conflict reports and things like that. The majority of them that I took myself were off of the Wasatch West unit. We're still just trying to keep the season separate, so we're only recommending a 1-week pre-baiting season. We're recommending again the fall limited entry archery only bait only season on the Book Cliffs. This hunt is only on the Book Cliffs. The season dates for this would run from August 8th to September 9th. This season, the weapon type is limited to archery tackle only, and you could bait or spot and stalk. One of the things that we found after the 2-week pre-baiting season was allowed on the summer season, we didn't allow that pre-baiting on any of the other seasons where you could bait, and some people were upset over that. So to be consistent, we're recommending that the 1-week early pre-baiting be allowed on any of our seasons where we allow bait. The percent permits filled on the sheet that I mailed out to, that was sent to all of you, it said 0% success. That was wrong. It should have said 40% success on this season. On our fall limited entry, we recommended no changes to this. And again, if you use bait during that season, we'd recommend a 1-week early to that. The season dates we're recommending August 20th to September 26th. We shut down for big game seasons and then open again October 29th to November 17th. The percent permits filled during this season were at 41%. The LaSalle and San Juan have a few, a little bit different date because they've got some limited entry elk hunts on that unit. So that one we're recommending August 13th to September 9th, and then it would open up again October 29th to November 17th. The percent permits filled on this season were at 8 and 4%. Part of that is because I believe the spot and stock were figured into that percent permits filled, and so it's a lot lower than it it really is when you look at this. On the boat cliffs, Bitter Creek South, we're recommending October 4th to November 17th for those dates. Limited entry spot and stock. The boat cliffs, Little Creek Roadless, a spring season from April 2nd to June 3rd, and then a fall season September 10th to November 17th, and then on the LaSalle and San Juan unit, October 4th to the 25th. The percent permits filled during this season are only about 6%. And so, like I said, we increased permits a lot this last year, but primarily a lot of those that increase were in these hunts where it's a really low success hunt. And so that's, last year when I came around and presented, I think our spot and stock success rate was around 20%. So that's quite a difference, but it's attributed to all that permit increase. Our limited entry multi-season permits, you can hunt any of the seasons approved for the unit the permit is authorized for. You have to use the appropriate weapon type and method authorized for the season being hunted. It can't be used during harvest objective season or for pursuits. And the percent permits filled for this season are at 49%. We are recommending some harvest objective hunts again this year. Spring season dates are April 2nd to June 3rd. No bait can be used during any of these harvest objective seasons. And then on the fall season dates for the 9 mile, September 26th to October 28th. And again, that's spot and stock only, no bait or no hounds on the 9 mile. The percent permits filled during this season, 70%. So that's, on the spring season, it was at 95%, which is really good. And the harvest objective, just as a reminder, we set a quota for those units. Unlimited permits are sold, and the unit stays open until either the quota is met or the season closes. And then, so for the majority of things, recommended permit numbers are not changing unless regions had something specifically that they're responding to. So for the most part, I'm going to just gloss over everything that's staying the same. I'll hit changes, and then I'll have Dax come up and present the Northeastern region recommendations. But on the Northern region, they're not recommending any changes to any of their seasons. They're keeping everything the same as it was last year. I'll let Dax do yours.
Dax Mangus, I'm your regional wildlife manager here. We made a little revision to the original recommendation sent out. We make our recommendation based on the harvest data, you know, in the context of the parameters in the plan that Leslie explained. And sometimes that we use the 3-year average because sometimes there are some big ups and downs, and it's nice to look at it. But we saw what looked like maybe a little bit of an alarming trend in the book cliffs. So we actually revised that recommendation and just have decided to keep permit numbers the same in the book cliffs for next year, the same as they were last year. So a slight decrease on the North Slope West Agate, staying the same on the South Slope Yellowstone and the South Slope Vernal Diamond Bonanza. I don't think there's a lot of bears harvested on Bonanza. The Wildlife Services usually kills a couple in the sheep up on Blue Mountain. And then a few permits added to the Wasatch Mountains Current Creek of Inequin Hunt. For Northeastern region, those are our changes.
Could you just say a little more details on what you saw in the book list? You were alarmed at the harvest percentage being too high?
Well, it was our percent female in the harvest jumped from, in the 3-year period to the 3-year average. 2013, it was 18% female. 2014 was 19% female. 2015 was 46% female. We had a big jump and so I guess we want to maybe back off a little bit there, just, instead of an increase, keep permits the same, give it another year and see, was that just an anomaly or is something really going on there? So I guess we're trying to err on the side of maybe being a little conservative when we see the percent female, 2.5-time increase in 1 year. So.
What was the reason that the numbers went down at West Agate?
Rand, do you remember that on the West Daggett? Amy's not here tonight. But.
It is. Let me bring it up to just double check. It was the criteria within the plan. It was outside the different categories that she discussed being light, moderate, and
yes.
kind of intensive. The liberal is what they're calling it. It was outside of those categories on one of the, or two of the criteria there. The percent female was a little high as, and came up. You have that. Right there.
I've got it.
Chart.
We can look at that. Wait, I didn't have that one written down.
Wait, I believe in 2014 we had an inordinate amount of problem bears,
and maybe
because of that they reduced the permits.
And we did change the strategy a little bit in Daggett County. Went to a harvest objective or quota in the spring. And I know, you know, we had a couple problem bears that were taken this year by harvest objective hunters. So, you know,
the numbers here, Leslie, just save you the time. We hit a 50% of our harvest was females this year up there, and so there was that exceeds the limit for the moderate units, and so that was why we recommended a small decrease.
Okay, that's good
because
it's not working.
I didn't like it.
I don't know what I did, but I'm not living right.
That's why we're answering.
Yeah.
Probably just
it's a 20% light. It's not huge. It's a 20% cut.
Do hunters have a way of identifying males from females unless they're really good?
Well, it depends on which method of hunting they're using.
I know that if they've got cubs, it would be
if
obvious.
If they've got cubs, that's obvious. If they only have tracks, say it's a hound hunting situation, and Dan can elaborate on this more than once, but there's actually a size of foot pad that you can actually even tell between an adult male anyway and an adult sow. The measurement of the foot, they can pretty well tell that way, and so they rarely turn out on adult females unless, you know, or that kind of thing. Unless they're really going after a younger bear and those kind of things, there is some there. The bait hunts, obviously, if they're sitting over bait, there are physical characteristics, the shape of the head, the distance between the ears and those kind of things, that if it's an informed hunter, a responsible hunter, they can tell those things to a degree. But there it is difficult when you get a young boar up a tree, and Dan can discuss this if he wants to be like share personal experience. It can be difficult to tell sometimes between a young boar and a, you know, bigger sow, and then things that there's no evidence whatsoever of cubs. If she didn't nurse that year at all, it can be a little difficult, but most of the folks know what it is they're harvesting. They're experienced hounds when they know what it is, what they're taking.
As you see a lot of female harvest during the bait season over the hounds. Unless they're high in a tree, like he said, dry, and not nursing anything, then they look a little bigger than normal. And then you can't identify the sex by looking at their genitalia, if you will.
Yeah.
So that's the only way to really accurately identify.
And one thing just to support these guys, Hal Black, who does a lot of the bear denning activities and stuff on the coast, reported, and some of the houndsmen have reported, that this past year there weren't a lot of cubs on the book cliffs, and that some of the sows were in poor condition. The book cliffs is one of our hardest units for bears in the state. It tends to be drier and that, but this year, water's up, grass is up, you know, it should be a better year for them. So that can be part of that female harvest too, is that if they didn't have cubs with them. Central region, the only change here is on the Wasatch West. That's one of the units where we had a lot of livestock depredation, and then we've got a lot of cabin lot areas. The previous year, a lot of the bears that we had problems with were taken out of this unit. We hit the quota really quickly, right off the bat, on that spring season. The region, because of the harvest biometrics and things that we got, they're requesting to back off a little bit on that, so they're decreasing that one by 15. The southeastern region, because of nuisance problems and bears are doing really well down there, they're recommending an increase on almost all of their units. Southern region, they're recommending a decrease on the beaver, a decrease on Panguitch Lake Zion, and then increases on the two plateau units. General pursuit season, we're recommending the dates be consistent with what they've been in the past. April 2nd to June 3rd for spring, July 4th to August 7th for summer, and then October 29th to November 17th for fall. We're recommending the same on the restricted pursuit with no changes to that, with the early being July 4th to July 18th, and then the later July 25th to August 7th. There is one recommended rule change, and this comes at the request of the U.S. Forest Service. In order to get a certificate of registration from the Division of Wildlife to bait, we require that you provide permission from either the private landowner, the BLM, or the Forest Service, so that we're aware that the person that you're going to be baiting on is aware that you're going to have a bait station there. Forest Service has a rule, that's been in place since 1994, that doesn't allow them to give permission for that activity on Forest Service land. So they've requested that we just remove them from our rule requiring permission. So the way that it will work is
that... So does that make it illegal?
No. So you can still bait on Forest Service lands. You just don't have to go get permission from them prior. We haven't worked out all of the details quite yet on how it will work. They can do a couple of different things. They can do a closure order for human protection, safety type things if they need to close an area for baiting. Or some of the things that have been discussed is that they'll provide a map, similar to like what they do for wood cutting, where it just shows areas of the forest where you're not allowed. So it makes it easier if you're baiting on Forest Service lands because you don't have to go to them first. You just come to us, and based on what they provide to us, we'll issue a bait COR. The thing that doesn't change, we still have in our rule requirements that you can't bait within a mile of a campground, on heavily used trails, trailheads, or different drainages. So none of that part changes. It's just you don't have to go get permission from them. You still have to get permission from the BLM, though. They didn't want to. They're not part of that. So in total, we're recommending... In summary, we're recommending a total of 705 permits. It's an increase of 14 from last year's recommendations. Overall, we increased sport harvest. We reduced nuisance and depredation take. And although we increased permit numbers, we didn't increase harvest over what it was last year. But again, we did increase sport harvest by 20%. So it's a little confusing when I say that. So I need to go back. And so 2013, we're higher than we were there, but we're not higher than last year. And then I just broke it out by season so you can see where the increases are mostly going, or decreases. Thank you.
Thank you, Leslie. Question, Brother Rack.
I've got one. I've been curious. What was our harvest on the late season fall for locals? We had all the other season percentage of the
late season fall.
Late season hound, huh?
The fall.
On both cliffs.
And the both cliffs.
Maybe.
Sorry, I wish this was working.
So this is the other fall hunt or the regular fall hunt, we had two males and three females taken.
How many were fishing?
And that's the fall one.
But I mean, how many permits?
Oh, how many permits for fall?
Yeah. There were six permits.
Six.
Then you have some sportsmen on top of that.
You have 506 harvested?
Two, three.
Yeah, the multi-season permit hunters could have been out. Still, I know a couple of those guys are still hunting too.
Yeah.
Question on the, I've heard back last spring about the weird spring we had. The denning studies had all kinds of weird stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
No cubs.
Never mind. Sometimes you can open it.
Maybe bears leaving the dens early and stuff like that. Is the spring data? Were you able to use that, or was it really off on the denning studies?
We have some that we still have colored out there that they are visiting the dens. From what we can tell in 2015, there were any of the dens. We visited three, and all three of those adult females did not have any cubs with them in the den.
That's on the book. That's book
clip. Yeah,
sorry. That's book clip.
Sorry,
that's
is that what you were asking?
That's what I'm asking.
Okay, that's kind of what I thought there, Brett. But if you look back the last, since 2009, for instance, there's this one female, she's 16 years old in 2016, probably kind of more of your average, you know, female. In 2009, she had two cubs, following year, one yearling, two cubs, two yearlings, so cycles like that. And then there's another one that's a little bit younger. She'll be 12 in 2016. Again, 2009, two cubs, two yearlings, two cubs, one yearling, two cubs, two yearlings. But last year there was, as far as the three, like I say, it's a narrow scope. We did have some trail camera pictures of cubs at our guzzlers that we put in. But like I say, it's such a narrow scope, it's kind of hard to...
So let me clarify too. In accordance with the plan, when we use bear denning data, we have to average it over 5 years. So we want to see, in order for it to indicate what we call recruitment pulses, out of the 5 years, they have to have cubs with them at least twice. So 1 year isn't that concerning overall. When you look at the whole five-year trend. And so that's why the region's choosing to stay status quo, run it through the year, see how it looks this next year, and if we continue to not see cubs and that type of thing, then we'll probably address it next year. But for now, we don't want to be too reactive on it.
Wouldn't generally, if they had fresh cubs last year, they would at least have a yearling in with them this year?
They should.
Yep.
We had none.
No.
Of the three.
Of the three.
It's only three dams. Yeah. No cubs, no yearlings in the three.
Don't they kick the yearlings off when they have new cubs?
Yeah, so they will the second year. And then the next year they'll have the yearlings, and then after that they'll kick them out.
So usually you'll see yearlings in a den the following year, and then by that next spring those yearlings. So by the time they come out,
Did we have any collared sows killed this year across statewide? Do we know?
Yeah, there were several collared sows. There was one off the bed clips.
One or two.
Last year, by hand. One in our region.
Yeah,
a lot of great places.
Wildlife Services killed one.
Did they have bush this year?
When a house bears was taken to the house.
We did monitor several in the region too. And the others that we did, there are a couple of dens we did go to, did have cubs or yearlings with them.
I think on the book clips we're down to one, at least one of the howls. I think all of his have been taken but one.
But yeah, this shows three. Yeah, probably.
Another question about the rack. We should go public. Ben, state your name if you would.
Ben Lauder. Leslie, just a quick question about conservation permits. This last year with all the changes, conservation permit holders were able to hunt during the harvest objective seasons. Is that going to continue as well?
Yeah, that's an in rule. Has nothing to do with this.
Great, thank you.
I'd like to make a couple of comments.
If you would step up to the mic and state your name.
My name
is... Oh, wait. Is that a question or a comment?
It's a comment.
Okay, wait. If you just wait just a minute. We got a comment period coming up. Okay. I think you've turned in a card for me. Thank you. Any other questions? All right. Thank you. Thank you, Leslie. Comments by the public. Let's go with Kenneth. You're on top.
My name's Ken Long. I've hunted for years, and I'm really concerned over the bear population. Definitely in the book cliff, I've seen a major decline in it in the last 4 years. 4 years ago, On the pursuit hunt, we caught over 30 bear, treed them. The following year, it dropped by half. The next year, it dropped again. This year, it was almost impossible to find a bear out there. And I hunted hard. And they upped the permit, and what I seen happening is you'll go 10, 11 years before you can draw a tag, kill tag. So when people puts in to hunt, they expect to harvest a bear. And they're killing a lot of the females. There was females killed out there this year with cubs on them. The bears I caught out there had a couple of cubs, and somebody killed them a week later. And them cubs won't survive without their mothers. I'm a livestock person. You do not build your herds up by getting rid of your females. I don't care whether it's cow, sheep, deer, elk, or bear. You know, we need some way to limit the number of females that's taken. I started hunting Arizona this year. They have a lot of different units. They're broke up in little units, and they'll put a quota on them. As soon as they'll kill 1,000 or 2,000 in that area, that area's closed. And people have to go to the other units. And that seems to work pretty good down there. But we've got a problem in the book cliffs on the bears. And one reason, and I think, was feed, bad winters. Last year, there wasn't a berry out there or an acorn on that whole divide. You couldn't find nothing for them to eat. This year, there was a lot. There wasn't no bears. They seem to, they're gone. They've either moved out, been run off, or went to Colorado, but they're not out there this year. I spent a lot of time there during the hunts. I've got grandsons. We've participated in the pursuit hunts, the puppy training hunts, both of them. We did not draw no kill tags this year, but we did pursue them a lot. And I can see a big decrease in the bears. And I think any houseman will tell you the same thing.
Thank you, Ken. Appreciate that. Al, meet them. Representing Utah Houndsman.
Yeah, I'm representing the Utah Houndsman Association.
Well, what's your name? Sorry.
I got it.
Sorry.
We support
your name if you would, Al.
Hal Meekham is my name.
Thank you.
I represent the Utah Houndsman Association, and we support the fishing games proposal the way they have it. And we'd like to thank Leslie and the board members for all the work that they've done.
Thank you. Appreciate that, Al. Ben.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ben Otter representing the Utah Bowmen's Association.
Sorry, what?
Ben
your
Otter.
Name?
Ben
okay, sorry.
I'll
Thanks, Leslie.
Yeah.
A lot of new changes this past year that we're continuing on this year, and I'd like to applaud Leslie and the division for all the changes that have been made. We've seen in her presentation tonight that they've had the intended effect that the reduction in wildlife services and take and the increase in hunter take. So that we've been really pleased to see that. We support the recommendations as presented tonight with one exception. That exception is concerning the pre-baiting time period on the bait hunts. Last year, for this past season, the Wildlife Board approved 2 weeks of pre-baiting. We'd like to see that continue. So we encourage you to recommend a 2 week pre-baiting period. Thank you.
Thank you. John Larson.
Good to be with you tonight. My name is John Larson with Sportsman for Fish and Wildlife. Thank you, Leslie, again for your presentation. Great job as usual. And thank all of you for being here as well. We do accept the division's plan as presented tonight with one exception. It's the same exception that Ben referred to, and that's the pre-baiting season. We'd like to see that remain 2 weeks rather than being cut back to the 1 week period. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate the comments. All four of our public today had comments. I appreciate that. You guys beat here tonight. It's a lot of those comments for us. Okay, we're down to comments by the rack.
Yes, I have.
Gary?
I would like to have the wildlife folks, maybe Leslie, take a crack at his comments about the what he's not seeing on the book lists, number one, and then explain to us, secondly, why wildlife would like to go to 1 week pre-baiting instead of two, because I don't think that was explained very well.
Okay, so I'll do that part first, and then I'll have Clint come up and talk about the book clips.
Okay, thank you.
Since he's the biologist over that. As far as the pre-baiting goes, our original intent between separating the spring and summer season was to eliminate conflicts that happen. If you have bait out, and you have a bear that's coming to the bait, and you have a houndsman that is going off of the scent, chances are more than likely you're going to run across the bait. It is illegal to run hounds off of bait in the state of Utah. Our law enforcement has a very hard time proving that that's happening when you have both seasons running concurrently. In our fall season, it's not such a big deal because bears don't frequent bait as easily in the fall as they do in the spring. They're just much easier to bait in the spring. Plus, we have far fewer permits in the fall. So we don't tend to get the complaints like we do during the spring season. So our original intent was to try and reduce that conflict because in some cases it got pretty ugly for some of our regional folks. And mostly our law enforcement who have to deal with it when you've got a conflict out in the field. So we were trying to eliminate that, but then we wanted to add that extra season in to try and increase harvest. So the original intent was to not have them overlap. There was concern by people that were baiting that the 4 weeks later in June that hides would be rubbed, and so everybody kind of wants this 2 week period in June. It's the most desired, and so when we set this up, we gave 1 week to the hound season for the first week of June, and then the second part of that we gave to the bait so that they all kind of get that premier when they all want to be there. But they felt strongly that they need 2 weeks prior to that week in June to get bears in to their baits. And it was a compromise. If the Wildlife Board did approve the 2 weeks, and we had said, we'll agree to 1 week, but they approved 2 weeks. And we're just trying to reduce conflicts. I still got calls this year, not as much as we've had in the past, but.
Question for Leslie on the same note. Who's doing all the complaining? It's the bait.
The bait people.
And it's the bait people who want the 2 weeks.
Well, and that's been the argument in the other racks is, well, if those people don't want conflict, then they shouldn't be baiting. That being said, hound people are very concerned that they get the black eye for being the one to run across the bait. And so they're a little bit concerned about that too, but overall I don't think it would affect them that much to have 2 weeks.
But your main complaints are coming from the bait.
From the bait people.
What's your gentleman's response to that? It's your people that's complaining.
Yeah, I think it's an education issue, to be honest with you. For one, the number of complaints, as I understand it, have been reduced. But then also, one of the complaints that I've heard is somebody that had a bait tag, had a bear, had pictures of dogs, and you know, a big bear on their bait and pictures of dogs, and they said the houndsman killed their bear. That bear's not their bear. You know, I use the analogy, it's no different than in the fall we have an archery elk season and then a rifle elk season and a muzzleloader elk season. If a guy that has a rifle elk tag watches a bow hunter kill the elk that he's been watching all summer, it's just part of the game with the tag that he drew. If somebody draws a bait tag and is concerned about having the possibility of hounds run off of their bait during that 2 weeks, they have every prerogative to wait until the hunt starts. The person is an experienced bear hunter, and the majority of my experience has been over bait. I would much rather have that 2 weeks and that option, and I'd be okay if I have some hounds run across my bait. That's just part of the game. We're talking about public land, public resources, So, yeah, short answer is I think it's an education issue.
Well, I appreciate your concern, but you're still not stopping the problem that these folks have got with the complaints.
But I guess the houndsman can't run it during the archery season, right?
No.
Right.
I mean, while the hunter's hunting, there's no hounds in the field. It's just the week or two before when they're baiting, yeah, trying to bring it in
for the season. Yeah, concerning the spring and summer season, that's correct. In the fall season, there's a complete override. You can run hounds or bait at the same time. Does that address your questions?
Well, you haven't convinced me to go to side up with you yet. Because of you're not selling. I know what's people complaining.
Sure. Let me add this. As I understand it, the majority of the complaints, if not all the complaints this year, come off the Wasatch. And if we look at the Wasatch unit went to a spring harvest objective season this year. The quota was filled after Memorial Day, close to maybe a week before the spring season ended. And the Wasatch had a very high quota as well. Okay? The quota was 30 bears. The Wasatch unit sits right next to Utah and Salt Lake County, the two major metropolises in Utah. And so it's very easy access, very easy for people to get out and go hunt that unit. And so, yeah, there was a lot of people hunting on that unit during that last portion of the spring season. And so it's natural to see that conflict there. And for the number of conflicts that came in compared to the number of people that were hunting that unit, I think it's pretty minimal, to be honest with you. You're gonna have hunter conflict no matter what we're talking about. We're talking about deer hunters and elk hunters getting in each way. Like I said, an archery hunter and a rifle hunter out scouting during the archery hunt, or vice versa, the archery hunter kills an elk before the rifle starts. I don't see it any differently in the bear hunt. There's two seasons, one before the other.
Could I ask you a couple of questions?
Yeah, absolutely.
So tell me, how many times do you visit your bait station from the time that you put it out in that 2-week period before the hunt? Do you go every day, and why wouldn't 7 days be enough?
So two questions are
all that's two questions. Yeah. So that's two questions.
Concerning the amount of time, how often I would attend to a bait, it's kind of conditional upon whether or not it's active, if there's been a bear hit, active on that bait. Also proximity, to the bait. I do some out-of-state hunting, I do some in-state hunting when I can draw a tag. For instance, I helped my brother with a hunt in 2011 that was very close to my home, and I attended those, we ran two baits, I attended those baits nearly every day for about 5.5-6 weeks. When I'm hunting out of state, I'll go once a week.
Do you have cameras on?
Yeah, I use cameras. Yep. And then also that frequency can change. Like I said, if you have an active bait or not. If you've got an active bait, you want to keep those bears coming, so you might tend it a little more often to keep that bait replenished. I'm sorry, refresh my memory of your second question. Or did that address your first question?
Well, the second question was, why won't 7 days work?
Okay.
And the third question is, what do you use for bait?
Sure. So second question, the amount of bait you have. In my opinion, it takes 2 weeks to really establish a bait. I've had bears on baits as quick as 4 hours after I put a bait out. But then I've also had other baits that are in prime bear country that have taken 3+ weeks to have a bear hit. So to really establish a bait, in my opinion, it takes 2 weeks. 1 week is a short time period to get a bait established and bears continually coming to that bait. And that's why we asked for that 2-week preseason, because that summer season is a very short season. And so, and as Leslie mentioned, those first 2 weeks are desired by everybody, the houndsmen, baiters, and so forth. And so, in order for that first week of that baiting season to be productive, you can't start baiting that first day. You're not going to be hunting. That's why we ask for the two weeks pre-baiting, so that we can have an established bait and actually be hunting that first day that that hunt opens. And then as far as what's used for bait, bears aren't picky. You can use about anything under the sun. Sweets are very popular. Bears have very high sweet tooth. So.
Is there anything that's illegal to use?
Game meat is illegal. Other than that, I'm not aware of. And
you have some substances that you contain your bait in that are illegal.
You can't use containers.
Barrels, containers, metal. Too.
Anything that they could eat and ingest, like plastic.
Mr. Chairman, I got a question for Russell.
Okay. Is it true that there's just one unit where the major ingested planes come out of the Wasatch unit?
This last year, yeah. It was the Wasatch. What? But previous to that, Randall can comment on the problems here in the northeastern region specifically. Because
that's
this
a history of problems in our region here in the past. And it's been for both sides. We've had hounds that have been shut down and cut off. You know, hunters will come out and
on this traffic. On this issue, this 2 week issue.
Well, this 2 weeks only been here this year.
Well, that's what. But that's not it. What I'm talking about.
Okay, so that's why I say for this year. Yeah, this is.
I'm just talking about this 2 week stuff.
Is the Wasatch
just one unit?
The Wasatch was primarily where I took complaints from.
So just one unit.
Mitch, we do still have the law enforcement issue of whether or not dogs will run off of those baits on every unit in the state.
The one thing that I will throw out there too is that honestly the June season is not that much different than the previous spring season and the length of the spring season that never had free baiting on it in the past.
Hal's got a question. Will you stand up a minute, Hal, so we don't hear you?
Yeah, this unit that they had the problems on, did you not say that it closed earlier, like Memorial Day?
It closed by,
See, so the unit closed, so there was a week after it closed that there was no hounds there. And I don't think the hound club would have an issue with going to the 2 weeks because on the problem unit, it's probably going to close again early anyway. And so I see no reason that we couldn't do the 2 week thing. I mean, I don't.
Let me comment from the division. As far as the 2 week pre-baiting season goes, if it passes, it's not going to be that big of a deal for our agency. I would like to see the two seasons separated because that was the original intent of proposing the two seasons was to keep them separate to prevent conflict. By bringing up the conflict on the Wasatch, I'm saying that, yes, there still was some conflict between bait hunters and hound hunters. Overall, does it impact anything overall? Probably not. So if the 2 week is added, it's not going to make that big of a difference.
Well, I'd like to make the point that those permits are hard to draw. There's only six of them. So I can lean to your way a little more all the time because those guys really mean
it. All hunter, are you talking to Wasatch?
Just the spring hunt. I'm just talking to spring hunt.
Wasatch has for the draw for the archery only summer hunt. Is that what you're talking about? Which hunter are you talking to?
It's not
the
real
name. Yeah, okay, yeah. The bait only hunt. In the summer hunt or the spring?
The summer hunt.
Okay, we have the conflict is. We have a spring harvest objective tag when we use hounds. That's where the conflict comes in between that period of time when they start putting the bait out until their season opens and it doesn't deal with that other season.
So on the Wasatch West, 25 quota permits will be issued this year. There will be 21 summer limited entry permits where they could use bait. So that's 21 bait stations and a person's allowed up to 2 bait stations. So that could be 42 bait stations.
And it's not just a complaint. And they're turning them in as if it's a violation, so you have to deal with it.
It's not turned in as a violation. Mostly it's a complaint because they feel that it's unfair, that hounds are running off of their bait. And to be honest, you can't tell whether or not it just ran through or whether or not they know that the bait station's registered there, so they start there. And that's been the biggest thing, and I can point to our law enforcement guy here who's shaking his head. That's the hardest complaint for us to deal with because it is against the law for hounds to be run off of bait. I think the majority of our houndsmen do not do that, but there are some that We have reports of it every year.
Can I speak on this? So I've been on both sides, Mitch. I've had archery permits. My wife had one. I run hounds. It's kind of a double-edged sword you're weighing on. But we had a particular instance where we had a bait site. She gets two bait sites to hunt off of. And so the archery hunters, when you only have that limited availability to you, it's personable. So when you start to see game come into them cameras and hit your baits, you see some hounds come in, you know, usually some people are a little tolerant, but then when you see that reoccurring hound with the typical same brand in the ear, perhaps a picture of the houndsman running them hounds, and he keeps the periodically showing up to that area, is where the conflict comes in. So, to me, we can't clarify if it was a one-time deal or somebody being overly sensitive for the bait and throw up a red flag. So it's really tough. Now, I had another bait myself years ago where I had one houndsman come through my bait station. That was it. I harvested a bear off of there. No other problems. But it's strategic placement, and the division does their best. I worked with them last year on two bait hunters in the booklets. And we have to get approval where we can put those baits. And if a bait hunter's going to do his homework and harvest a good bear, it ain't going to be next to the rope. But that's the problem. When they go place them, there's limitations to a rope. But when they go place them close to a road, water, and you got a road that drives between them, they better expect hounds. That's an expectation and education that he was referring to that they should expect, because you got a bear, you got food and water, and you got a bedding area, just like any other big game. If you have a road that goes between there, you're going to expect it. So whether that was any further clarification or settled you anymore, I mean, there's going to be conflict.
I'll pinpoint it. So what do you have on this? The 10 to 2 weeks of the week?
I'm tired of being a houndsman and getting complained out about everything.
Is that an answer to my question?
No, yeah. I'm answering the question.
You're a 7-day guy, right?
No.
2 weeks.
For the 2 weeks, them complaining about that doesn't affect my hound season. If they started complaining about it and affect my season, then I...
Yeah, the alternate is close one season,
exactly.
Start one earlier and not be able to have any overlap.
So if there's a happy medium between the two, and Ben's educated on this and experienced bait hunter, and Hal and I and Ken are experienced houndsmen, that bait season for us doesn't mean anything. But if it's a black guy, then it starts to mean something. You see what I'm saying? We don't do it intentionally. There's 2 weeks prior. Now, on this particular unit, if I'm not mistaken, the pursuit season's still open, right?
Yes.
So whether the harvest permits were filled or not, there's a pursuit season. So they could have still had all 200 of them houndsmen running that mountain legally for fulfilling their pursuit permit they paid for, and you still got them complaining about it. So it's a give or take thing, you know, and quite honestly, those of us that come and fight for this kind of stuff, we don't see a problem.
Well, I feel for you because I get people calling about one cow pie campsite. They're off your four-wheelers driving through all my ponds. And
yep.
It's their complaint that gets hurt. So I know exactly
what
it's like.
I'm the only houndsman that complained this year. I'm the only one that called Clint and complained this year. We're always getting the complaints when it comes to deer and elk conflicts. An archery hunter sitting on water waiting for an animal to come in. Well, what animal's going to come in? They want an elk. Well, bear, deer, everything else come through. I run a bear through that area. Oh, they just blew my elk out of here. My hunt's screwed. Them damn houndsmen need to hunt somewhere else. But why don't we have the same rights and availability as they do? You know, so.
Well, it's curious because you're on the housing side, and it's these debaters that are doing the cussing.
But I do as much archery hunting and bait hunting
and my daughter
as well.
My daughter does too. So, what was your position? You talk like, well, we can live with it.
Honestly, I believe that knowing the way that the other racks have gone, I believe that the 2 week pre-mating season is going to pass. And honestly, if it does, the division can live with it.
These guys make the big bucks, so they'll be all right.
Hold on.
Kevin would like to comment, like he said, anytime you're running hounds and you've got people hunting with archery, whether it's elk, deer, and even your rifle hunts, getting as bad now. To find a bear, you load your dogs up, you drive until they bark. When one crosses the road, then you get out and you find the track and you turn them loose. Well, a lot of these baiters are putting their bait within 25 foot of the road. So a dog's going to bark. And a bear will, the reason they use the bait is to bring the bear from this draw over here to this and keep them coming back and forth because they know they're going to get fed there. Houndsmen don't know. You might come down and you drove the road and can't find nothing, so you decide to walk the canyon with two or three dogs. All of a sudden your dogs hit a bear trap. They're gone. Where'd the bear go the night before? He'd been in, filled his belly and left. So they're going to go through there. I've had more problems with Colorado elk hunters than any. I haven't had a problem with the guys setting on their baits much with their archery. But Colorado elk hunt goes right when we hunt in the fall. And they'll camp right where the bear crosses every day. You know, when you come down through there, even though you're in Colorado heading for Utah, your dogs are going to bark. There's no way to shut them up. They smell that game, they go ballistic, the whole box. And that's what gives the houndsman a bad reputation, that kind of stuff.
Okay, thank you. All right, any other comments? Jerry.
One more tip for these guys with bait. So, would 2 weeks enhance the take of the bear? I mean, if you get it out there for 2 weeks and you've got a camera, chances are that you're going to know if there's a good boar in the area more so than 1 week. Is that true?
Yeah, I mean, if you're using cameras, you're going to have more data, you know, as far as the pattern goes. For me, it's even more than that. It's just about being able to establish that bait and get a bear drawn to that, you know, to that location prior to that hunt starting so that you can be hunting on that first day that season opens.
Seems to me like that it would limit the amount of females that get killed by staying with the 2 week.
Yeah, and I could see that as potential as well, because you know the more pictures you get, the more the higher number of different angles you've got to be able to look at them and analyze them. And you know, Sal doesn't always come in with her cubs. Sometimes she'll stash her cubs and come in by herself, and so that, you know, if you've got 2 weeks of pictures, then yeah, maybe you've got a couple of pictures with a sow coming in with her cubs rather than if you only got a few days. Maybe she came in by herself and left the cubs, you know, outside of the, you know, the cameras and all that
stuff. If I can touch on that too, their bait season is right during the rut, if you will, for the bears. So a strategic asset, then females are going to be more consistent to mate. And what's going to do for that is it's going to draw them boars to come in and bring them a circle for the breeding cycles. But like Ben said, if it can help reduce the sows, which if you can get that many more pictures to identify whether she has cubs or if it is a boar or a sow, my concern is population and not over harvest. And if it can help identify the sex of the bear, I rule that as a plus.
Yeah. And I need to make a correction to something I said. I said that before the spring season was similar, it wasn't. Spring season last, before the changes, went from about April 4th to May 25th. So it was about 8 weeks long.
Thank you, Leslie. Other discussion by the rec?
Mr. Chair, wasn't Clint Sampson address this gentleman's concern about the, okay, yeah, Clint?
If you want me to, Dan.
Well, yeah, yeah.
I thought you forgot.
Yeah, I want to hear this.
He's ducking, he's seeing you in there.
It's hard to hide. Look this big. Clint Sampson, wildlife biologist at the Bookcliffs. I'm going to start my 7-part lecture series. No, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to touch that. I respect Ken a lot. He's a great neighbor. He's taken me out and taught me the ways of the houndsman. Where I grew up, we didn't have hounds. We didn't run anything like that. And so it was a whole cultural education when I moved out here to the basin, and just embraced it full heart with my full heart. We had some fun days out there in the Bookcliffs, running bears and running lions, and Ken making fun of how slow I am and stumbling all over myself. But you know, I've never met probably more passionate people than houndsmen. I mean, they will cuss their dogs and beat their dogs, but they will drive and walk to the ends of the earth to get them back.
And nobody else can touch them.
You know, they will walk off the south side through the most nasty stuff you could ever imagine and have to walk back up or pick you up at Junction. That's what I'd do if I go off the south side of the Bookcliffs. But, you know, very passionate people. As far as Ken's concerned about bears in the Bookcliffs, you know, I don't want to discount anything that he's brought to the table. Obviously, he's been hunting a lot longer than I ever have in the Bookcliffs and has seen changes come and go, I'm sure, out there. But one thing that we are trying to do as a management tool in the Bookcliffs, we're not trying to increase the amount of bears in the Bookcliffs right now. And so with the amount of female harvest we've had the two previous years, you know, we're fine with that. This last year it was significantly higher, 46% female harvest this year, and so that's why, according to the plan, we could increase permits by 20% or even more, I think 20 to 40%. And so instead of going that route, we're keeping permit numbers the same and we go off averages. You know, last year might have been a bad year. I know you hunted a different area than you were used to hunting to. I don't know if that played into it or not, but the Bookcliffs, in my mind, is a place where you can go out and see bears from the road. I mean, just driving the roads, if you put your time in, you know, and that's why it's so popular to hunt, because you can go and cut tracks on the roads and everything like that. And I respect Ken's concerns, and I think our recommendations represent that in general, because we're not increasing permits.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
On the North Slope unit, we went for a decrease because of our female harvest. And here we're going to stand steady.
We're out of the parameters, the 3-year average for the plan. We're out of the parameters, on the North Slope. And so that's why I recommended the increase. We're actually even still within the parameters to recommend an increase in the Bookcliffs. But we're not, because of comments like Mr. Long's, and because, you know, we're sensitive to people's concerns there. Even though the plan would allow us to make a recommendation for a 20 to 40% increase in the Bookcliffs, we're recommending to keep it the same because we've heard some of these concerns and have a few concerns of our own. So, you know, but on the North Slope unit there, we're outside the parameters of the plan, and so it requires a decrease, and that's why we're doing it.
So one more question along those lines. Next year comes along, we had a good feed year, we get great sow reproduction, we have a lot of cubs. Our sow harvest decreases because those cubs are the only thing saving our life. What are we going to do next year?
You'll have to wait for a year to find out. I hate to speculate, but what we'll do is what we always do. We'll collect the best data we can get, we'll assess that data in the context of our management plan, and make a recommendation accordingly. And that recommendation might get altered if there's a whole lot of public sentiment or concern, or we see something that's really, you know, a real big outlier. But that's what we're gonna do, is look at the data, assess it in the context of the management plans that have gone through the RAC and board process and been approved, and then make a recommendation according to that.
But a real concern though, possibly.
Yeah, if it comes back and there's hardly any female harvest, you know, and our 3-year averages look good, you know, we might recommend an increase in permits. It just depends on what the data says, and following our plan is what we're gonna try to do.
Dan, there is the other criteria that's in there too, the number of adult males, older than five. So they're not just the one, it's not just purely females. And that's the issue on the North Slope, and you know this, you know, just for everybody else, there's the North Slope was out on those both criteria there. And that's why it required that we would reduce permits there,
right?
The book lifts, actually, the percent of adult males was still, you know, really high. And that's maybe an artifact of the fact that you had good pop production for 10 years, really, to get good mature ones out there, of course. And so, yeah, if both of those fall down or go outside the parameters, then it will require a reduction. If they go the other way and get better and better, then it could lead to increasing permits. And which way they go?
Perfect answer. Thank you.
Jerry, you have a comment?
No, that answers my question. Comment?
Thank you.
More discussion? All right. You ready for a motion?
I'll make a motion, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, Daniel?
I make a motion we accept the proposal as presented by the DWR with the concerns of the hound or the bowman for the 2 weeks pre-baiting.
Change it from 1 week to 2 weeks?
Yes, sir.
Okay, do we have a second for that motion?
I'll second that motion.
And a second by Jerry. Any other discussion before we vote? All right, we'll vote on that motion. All those in favor? Unanimous. Okay, thank you. Leslie, we want to thank you. You have got a tough job. She's been in this job now for, a year and a half? Two years?
Yep.
But and just done a magnificent job in there. She has to deal with a lot of passionate people. We appreciate what you do.
Thank you. And I want to thank you guys for asking questions. You guys ask amazing questions, and I'm impressed by your app. So.
Thank you. Well, that was the last item on our agenda, so I guess if we want to motion to adjourn, we'll entertain that one.
Yeah, I'll make that motion. Yeah. We'll adjourn the meeting.
All right. Brett seconded. Dana made the motion. You seconded, all in favor?
That's
unanimous. Thank you.
Thank you.